A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Before we get going, I wanted to just pay tribute to the lovely Imelda Mountfield, who tragically passed away yesterday. Imelda was married to friend of the show Manny from the Stone Roses and Primal Scream, and both were really good friends with Paul, who was often invited round to the house when he was in Manchester to sample one of Imelda's famous Sunday dinners. We all send our deepest love and condolences to Manny and their twin boys, and of course to all of Imelda's family and friends. Hi there and welcome to this special bonus edition of the Paul Ryder Tapes. There's still more of the main series to come, but this week, in honour of the fact that Paul's solo project Big Arms album Radiator is re-released today, exactly 16 years after its original launch, we're playing the interviews that I did with Paul's friends and collaborators, the Big Arm Boys. That's Pete Smith, the programmer, keyboards and producer, Danny Shaw, the drummer, an incredible mimic, and Daz Gilkinson, the ace guitarist and all-round great lad. Plus, of course, Lee Mullen, the percussionist extraordinaire, and, of course, Big Arm's fab roadie, driver and tour assistant, Chris Connolly, also known as Double Pudding and Chips. Here, Daz recalls an incident that took place when Big Arm supported Ian Brown.
Remember that? I can't remember which one it was with Ian Brown. And Paul had obviously told Ian Brown about Danny's mimicking skills.
Yeah.
So then
yeah.
Ian Brown comes rushing into the dressing room.
Who's
the mimic? Who's the mimic?
Who's the mimic? Who's
so the mimic? So Danny here goes, go on then. So he does Jules Holland, amazing. Introduces Ian Brown on Jules Holland.
Yeah.
And then this is Ian Brown. So it's a long time since you last worked with the Roses.
So yeah. And he was like, oh, fucking great, man, great.
And then as soon as he walked out and shut the door, Danny started doing Ian Brown. This is getting very confusing.
Daz recalls the first time he met Paul.
Well, I was in a studio at Whitworth, and one night the lad who ran the studio got a phone call off Pete Smith asking if he'd come down and do some backing vocals. So I think he asked me just to come along with him as a bit of support. Anyway, when we got down there, I met Pete and there were some guitars there. So Pete just said, why don't you have a go? About 2 hours into the night, then Paul walks in. So I didn't even recognise him at all. You know, it was just like, well, how are you, mate? See, I was a bit of a rocker as a young'un, but my brother was completely Manchester. So when I went back and told him, and he's just like, mouth dropped. You know, do you know who he is? And I'm like, well, no, not really. Then he filled in the gaps and showed me some footage and played some music. And it was like, oh, all right, I know what you mean. But I'm really glad I didn't know that before I met him.
Pete Smith first met Paul more than 30 years ago through their mutual friend, John Pennington.
I was kind of hanging on and working in Strawberry part-time. And so I knew John for that. I'd been there a couple of years. And he said, oh, we've got this session around the corner with Paul Ryder. So I was like, well, what is it? So, because all I knew was the Mondays up to that point. And I think he'd been working with Paul on Bummed in Strawberry, and that's how he kind of got to know Paul. And he said, oh, it's just, I don't know, it's like something he's doing like after the Monday split up. I'd like someone to kind of get involved more producing and writing. So I was like, oh, okay. So I went round and we wrote one of the Estrella tunes at that point. And I've met that. So that's when I met Paul, basically, with him and Estrella, the start of the Estrella thing.
Estrella was Paul's girlfriend and the daughter of Donovan, and Paul was collaborating with her at the time on some tunes.
And then we spent about 2 years or something like that sporadically writing songs, and that's when Donovan got involved and said, let's do this properly, I'll put some money into it, let's get it finished off and released. We rented a little studio in New Mount Street in Manchester and tried to get as many tracks finished as we could. And then we went into the studio to mix them. And what happened was that Paul was falling off the wagon whilst this mixing session was happening. And Estrella was like, right, that's it, we're done. And then she got together with one of the rappers and Paul disappeared for a little while. And then we carried on. And then we'd mixed these 7 tracks and she was like, right, I don't like any of them. And I'd been like, well, I've just spent the last 3 years of my life doing this stuff. So at that point, right, I sold everything that I had, sold my sampler, sold my keyboards, everything, and was like, right, that's it with music now, I'm done. And then it was only when Paul rang me up a couple of years later and said, I want to do some more stuff, and that's when Big Arm was formed.
Paul soon recruited the Mondays percussionist Lee Mullen into the Big Arm fold. But they'd first met when Paul was auditioning Lee for the Mondays.
I first met Paul on my audition for the Happy Mondays. There would have been a room in Greenhouse Studios with myself, Paul, Ben Leach, the MD, and Gary Whelan. So my first impressions of Paul really were, he was the most welcoming, really. And we didn't really play very many of the sort of Happy Mondays songs, I remember. I think we just jammed. And Paul made me feel very easy very quickly. And after us playing for maybe around 40 minutes or something, he said, right, welcome to the family. You're in the band. You're lead percussion in the band. So that's what he said. And that's why I went on to me playing, obviously, with Big Arm and also playing in Buffalo 66 as well. So 3 bands, really.
Drummer Danny Short came through a recommendation from a friend.
When I first met Paul, I think it was in 2002, when a mutual friend, Rob Farrington, introduced the two of us. I used to house show with Rob, and obviously he knew that I was a musician and was always banging on about, you know, how he knew Paul and you need to meet him and maybe you could end up working with him at some point. So I think Rob managed to drag him along to a gig. I got chatting to him and he mentioned that he was doing some music with Pete for the film 24 Hour Party People. And so I went along. The first time I worked with Paul and Pete in the studio at Worsley was whilst they were making this track, and I contributed a tiny little bit of guitar to the track. The next thing I know, Paul rang me again and said, me and Pete have been working on some material, possibly for an album. Would you like to, you know, get involved with that? So I came along, did a bit of singing, playing guitar, some drums, and what we did ended up becoming the Radiator album. They were like the demos for the album that became Radiator.
And then along came guitarist Daz Gilkinson.
So behind the scenes, Paul and Pete are cramming it in to try and get things going. Then I turn up and can you put anything to this? So I just get stuck in me. I just close my eyes and off I go. So as soon as I got what they were aiming at, I just flew at it then.
And did you enjoy what you were making, what you were playing?
Oh, it was wonderful. I loved it. And the way we did, because we were always falling about laughing, you know. I always tried to get it right when we were doing it, but in between doing it was just banter all the way. It was such an enjoyable band, that.
Do you remember that gig that where Pete was late and you had to go on stage before Pete got there, and Derek had to stand
I
in.
Do.
Big Arms keyboardist and programmer Pete Smith will never live that night down. It was a really important show for Big Arm, playing for the first time in front of a massive crowd in London supporting Ian Brown. Literally, the band had to go on stage and start performing before he'd even arrived at the venue. Everyone was almost having heart attacks.
Yeah. I lived through that. I was fit in the kitchen, like, in the morning. And it overran, that's why I was late. So I get the train to London, and then I get on the tube, and I've never got off the tube in Brixton before. So it's like, you know when you come off the tube in Brixton, there's like loads of steps, isn't there? And then you just come out onto the main street, and it's like, whoa! And so I'm coming up these steps, and Chris is at the top of the steps, and he's like, quick, come on! Right, so I'm running down the street. I'm running down the high street in Brixton, like following Chris. We kind of legged it in the stage door, and he's like shoving me through. And then on the stage, and I put my bag down at the back of the stage. I walked on, took my coat off, put my coat down, tapped Derek on the shoulder. He got up and walked off, and I sat down and just started
Like
shit.
Was it the middle of the first song?
I think so, yeah. Well, it was nuts because it was like Brixton Academy with like however many thousand people in there. It was just like.
And were you two not? Were you and the rest of the band not panicking that Pete?
No. We knew he'd get them. Plenty of time, you know.
No. Quick, wait.
Yeah, get in, man. Come on, you're going to be late.
Run faster.
For God's sake.
When you played live, Pete, what did you actually do then? Because if Derek was able to replicate you by pressing the button.
Crosswords.
A few bits missing, you know, but it was sparse, you know.
I mean, it's a bit like I was kind of putting the icing on the cake, let's just put it like that.
So if you'd not shown up until six songs in, would people have noticed?
No.
He was there in spirit. Yeah. He was there in spirit.
I did play some parts, but I probably also had him on track just in case I didn't feel up to it that night.
So it was the driver, roadie Chris Connolly, who saved the day by helping Pete get to the venue in the nick of time.
Yeah, my name's Chris Connolly. I was a driver roadie for Big Arm for around about 2.5 years. I was known in Big Arm as Double Pudding and Chips because back then I was 20 stone and I loved that nickname. A lot of people would have got a smack off me for that nickname, but Paul gave me that nickname and I loved it. If they would have made a Carry On film about a band, that was it. Being in Big Arm, being in and around Big Arm, what with Danny Short and all the lads. And Paul had his moments, he was hilarious. But me and Derek as well, driving to Berlin and back on our own, like Max and Paddy.
So it was when Big Arm had a gig in Berlin to do that Double Pudding drove to Berlin with the van and the equipment, along with Paul's dad, Derek. And the gig was actually in the British consulate in Berlin, so security was extra tight.
Double Pudding and Derek drove out there, drove all the equipment there, didn't they? We flew out there, and when we got there, Derek were grinning and chuckling as soon as I got there. And I thought there was something about to be sprung on us or something. I couldn't work out what it were. So then we pulls the van in and all these military come out with trolleys with mirrors on, checking because they had to lift all these, sink all these steel posts into the ground so we could drive in and then all the posts come in. Proper military operation, checking underneath for bombs and devices and thought, oh, this is full on. And that, right, you can start unloading your gear. So we starts pulling it out. And I don't know if you remember, Angela, I bought off eBay, it was like a missile artillery box and it was all khaki green with yellow military numbers all over it. But I used to put my effect pedals in there, they fit perfectly. And Derek, well, that's what he was sniggering at, because he knew I forgot to change it. That should never have gone over. And as they're pulling out, I could see it, the last bit of gear come out, and I could see it. And just as I'm going for it, I can hear Derek going, "Daz, Daz, your box, your box." And I pulled it out, and this guard shouted that loud at me. I put my hands up. He screamed at me, "Put that down."
And drummer Danny Short's impressions always kept everybody laughing in hysterics.
He's one of them, Paul. He was kind of, you know, he was easy to make laugh. He's quite a humorous fella, and I'm one of them. If I'm working in a band or anything, you know, with anything that I'm doing, I like to be able to have a bit of banter and to be able to have a laugh and not take myself too seriously. I mean, there's like a common fallacy that if you're having a bit of a laugh and you're messing about, you're doing less work, you know, and that, I don't think that's necessarily always the case, you know. I'm not saying the work environment should be like a circus, you know, you should all be doing cartwheels and everything and, you know, red nose on you and everything. But Paul always encouraged everyone to be humorous and have a laugh and a joke.
And guitarist Daz Gilkinson, like the rest of them, was blown away when they got the opportunity to support Ian Brown on a major UK tour. And at the same time, he was touring with another band he was in, an Oasis tribute band called Wonderwall.
The first gig we did with Ian Brown was Braehead Arena in Scotland. I think it's about 20,000 people or something. So the night before, I'd been in Birmingham doing a massive gig, as far as I were concerned. And there were about 3,500 there. I brought Wonderwall with me, and we went straight to that gig. And I walked on the stage, and the stage was bigger than the venue I'd played in the night before. And that was a bit of a...
Keyboardist Pete Smith remembers that night well too.
So I've got two great memories, right, from that night. The first one is when we're sat in catering and Ian Brown comes in.
We were at soundcheck, and Ian Brown had just finished there, so we were on stage setting up ours, and then Ian Brown comes in screaming at everybody.
Like, "Where's me fucking pie? Who's that old Miss Granny?
Who's had all me pie?" Went mad at everybody, stormed out.
Cupboard, he storms right out through this door, yeah, shuts the door behind him. And then, like, about 10 seconds later, he comes out and says, "It's a cupboard.
Don't you get out of this fucking building."
That's what he said. I remember me and Lee kind of like, don't laugh. And I even remember Paul saying, "For God's sake, just leave it." You know, just say, you
know. The other memory from that gig was like, so we come on stage and I was like, "Made it good here. I'm in a band. I'm supporting Ian Brown. It's just like 6,000 cap arena. I'm like, this is going to be great." So we go up to play the first song. Someone launched like a drink at me. And it was like one of those Blue Wicked drinks. Coated me entire keyboard. It was just like really sticky.
It's going to be one of those nights.
I was like, "Oh, I'll just put it on track." That's that then, isn't it? Cleaning it for days.
I mean, to be fair, Ian giving us them two shots was fantastic, weren't it? To get us out there, you couldn't ask for more. Oh, right, there's a good one. The Metro Club in Soho.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Zodiac Mind
War. We played with Zodiac Mind War. Alan McGee were DJing.
Yeah.
Was he?
Yeah. And yeah, so we'd done our spot, which went down great. And then we're in the dressing room, just mopping our brows and getting ready to go. And this magician-looking fella walks in, and he had a black cape on and a black hat and black shades and a cane.
Yeah.
And he walked in and he said, "Well, you look like you've done a bit, so if you won't mind fucking off so we could do a bit." And I'm looking, thinking, this magic act has got a terrible attitude. I didn't have a clue that he was a singer.
Just click things and...
Yeah. And anyway, Paul stood toe-to-toe and give it him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And me and Danny went upstairs thinking, "I'm not standing with this prick."
No.
And then Paul come up and I said, "How did you know him?" And he goes, "I don't know him." "Oh, all right. I thought you knew him. That's why I walked out." Talk about backup. Yeah. Good luck, Paul.
I always remember Paul saying, because he said, didn't he, no, fuck off. And Paul said, if you say fucking please, I will.
Yeah. 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 He didn't know what to do then, did he?
Oh.
He really pissed us off. And he really pissed Paul off.
I remember I met a Sex Pistol that night.
Paul Cook come and watched
us. He was in the audience, yeah. And yeah. So was Ian Astbury from the Cult.
That's right. Well. He was DJing.
He was, yeah.
Paul Cook was friends with Paul.
Yeah, we were. I was sat talking to him for ages. Mm. And then we left and Paul said, you haven't got a clue who that was, have you? And I went, no, why were
I remember playing on stage and there was actually a light shining on Paul Cook. I could see his face really, really vividly. It's like, there's a Sex Pistol.
What did you think about Paul singing? Because obviously that was a brand new thing for him from being a bass player.
It's kind of hats off to him because I do quite a bit of singing in bands I'm in, but I couldn't take my guitar off. I'd be naked. That would be the most uncomfortable thing. So the fact that he actually had a go at that, I'd have had to have a guitar there even if I weren't playing it. The fact Paul stood up and tried that, yeah, that's some doing that.
Do you think he was trying to prove a point to his brother doing Big Al?
I think he was trying to prove a point to himself that he's got this, you know, it's in his bones and his blood as much as anyone else's.
And percussionist Lee Mullen agrees.
I knew Paul loved Talking Heads and loved that kind of stuff, and all the bass was on track, so Paul could sing. And I thought that was really cool that Paul just decided to, you know, he always said to me, I want to be Brian Ferry in this band. I said to him, well, you've got the haircut and you've got the leather jacket, you know. And he said, yeah, I want to be cool in this band. He said, I wasn't cool in the Mondays. He said, I want to be cool in this band.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Daz believes Big Arm served a real purpose in Paul's life.
When Big Arm ran its course, so to speak, and he got back in the Mondays, I think he was completely now ready to get back in his rightful place and go for it big time, and he definitely seemed to do that. I think it served him well. It brought him back to, in the end, it brought him back to where he started.
Do you think Big Arm would have been any different if he hadn't had his issues with drugs and stuff? Do you think that really got in the way of the success?
I don't know. I wouldn't know what to say about that. I mean, yeah, I remember a few relapses with him, but when we did come together, the job was always done. There were nothing fell apart while we were halfway through anything. You know, there was stuff behind the scenes, but I don't know. I think it ran its course.
There was one particular night when me and Pete Smith, the keyboard player, ended up having to go and drag Paul out of a drug house, which was a particularly bad memory for me. I have a very, very vivid memory of driving with you to Gorton and going to that. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember it vividly. I remember having conversations with you and you saying that he disappeared and he'd taken the car and you thought you knew where he was, but you weren't sure. Yeah, we went out for a drive round, couldn't find him. And then we went out another time, and then we...
And he was there. I left you there with him because he said, oh, I've not finished yet. And I went off and left you there with him. Do you remember that?
I've got so many memories that are a bit like that with Paul. And what the weird thing about it is for me is that, like, it's obviously different for you and different for other people in his life. But I always kind of, I always put it in a box separate to everything else that was going on with me and Paul. It's weird, really, because I can remember when we first got married and we moved into that house next door but one to Claire's mum and dad. So she came home one day and she's like, Paul had been round, been doing some writing and stuff. And she's like, what's with all the Kit Kats in the toilet? So I was like, what do you mean? She's like, oh, there's a load of Kit Kat wrappers. What's been going on? I was like, well, nothing. Why? And I was like, it didn't dawn on me at all. And then we kind of, like, she was like, she kind of talked me through it. And I was like, right, okay, that kind of figures. So that was kind of when we first started working together properly outside of the studio. So I was like, right, okay. But I was like, well, that's nothing to do with me, what he does in his personal life. Like, we're just making music together. That was kind of before we became friends, if you like.
Did you not get to the point, though, where you knew Myloff, whether he was using or not?
No. Well, I think, yeah, probably sometime. Yeah, I've never been good at that.
Did you not feel traumatised? Like, look, that night when we went to that drug den to pull him out, did you not feel traumatised by that?
Not really. I just felt a little bit embarrassed.
For who? It's...
For all of us, really. It was just like, oh, what is this? We're like, why am I here? Like, I was there supporting you and him, but it was just like kind of a bit awkward. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, hi, Paul. Fancy seeing you here. His face was just like total shock when I pitched up. And I think he was a lot more embarrassed that I was there, so... But I mean, there's times when we had the studio in New Mount Street when we were doing the Estrella stuff. And I can remember when we were setting it up, we were putting like carpet over the walls and a big frame. And he was like half being sick in a bag underneath this huge roll of carpet while I was trying to nail it on the wall. And it was just like, oh, God, this is just like, it's hilarious, but also like terribly like tragic as well. There was one time when we were in there and there were loads of studios and management offices and stuff in there. And there was one day where we were looking after the neighbour's dog. And so I said to Paul, I got to lunchtime, I was like, I've got to go and feed the dog and let it out. So I'll be back in like an hour or something. So he was like, right, no worries, I'll stay here. So I went off, fed the dog, came back, and I opened the door, and Paul sat there, and then this other guy called Chris from round the corner in the office was sat there, and they both looked up, and they had, like, some foil like that, and, like, just looked up at me in total shock, and Paul went, he made me do it, and Chris went, it was his fault. And it was just like... Come on, guys. Like, it's like having two kids. Like, I can't leave you for an hour without you going scoring. But it's just like, yeah, so I've always kind of, it's traumatic in a way, but I've always kind of put that in a box and said, well, that's his personal life, you know. Because I've worked with so many musicians over the years that you have to kind of, you take them for their whole personality and everything, but it's like if I took on board his trauma and all the things that went along with that, then I don't think we'd have done half the stuff that we did, and I don't think we'd have kind of continued with it, really. I think, and a lot of people, musicians and people in the music industry, have substance issues and addiction issues, but somehow managed to function. I mean, you could say, you know, Paul managed to function over, you know, like four decades of being in bands and making music. Was it functional? Probably not, but did he make the music? Yes, so...
How different do you think his life would have been if he hadn't had addiction issues?
You know, it did drive wedges between him and other people, which, yeah. You know, closed off opportunities, yeah. I would say, definitely. But I don't know, maybe this is a little bit glib, but I work with a lot of musicians and they've all got demons of one sort or another. And that's part of what makes them what they are. It's part of what comes out in their art. It's like Amy Winehouse is a prime example. You know, if you took all that side of her away, would she have made the art that she made? And the answer is probably not. So it's like saying if you took all that trauma and that addiction away from Paul, what would his personality be? How would he be creative? Whilst he's undoubtedly probably not made the best of all the opportunities that he could have done, would he have been able to do that if he was clean? And it's hard, really, because it's so tragic when you see someone like Paul or like Amy Winehouse have that kind of that level of trauma that ultimately destroys them. Yeah. Then if you separate that away, you're kind of taking a part of them away. And the line between kind of insanity and genius is so, you can't kind of pull it apart. That's why I've always really loved working with musicians, because they're just fascinating creatures. They have so much going on beneath the surface. I've always found it really interesting getting into people's heads, into musicians' heads. And they're just fascinating creatures, really. They're just the most troubled, but also the most joyous people to be around.
I asked guitarist Daz Gilkinson what he felt about Paul.
Lovely fella. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you could chat to him about anything. And he showed, you know, I'll tell you what, I will say this about Paul. He did show me what to stay away from, you know, because I do recall thinking, this guy's an happy Monday, you know. God, I could be getting into anything here. And he just wasn't like that guy. And he told me everything about everything that had happened to him and everything what's happened to people, and totally scared me away from the whole thing. He made it quite clear how damaging it is.
What exactly? You know? What, you mean the drugs and the drinking? Or?
Yeah, what it had done to him, you know? I remember we were sat up one night and I had a few beers. Me and Paul sat up all night chatting, and he's like, well, you know, because of what I've done, I'm sat here having a coffee and a cig, you know? You've got choice. He said, I ain't got choice. I've had that took away because of how I behaved. He was really open, and it totally... Well, I say it to everybody, you know, if you want to lose everything that you love, go straight into all that, you know. If you want to keep it, keep away. It's simple. Yeah. And that, yeah, I am very grateful for that, you know. Some of the things he told us, like when they went Brazil and that for the first time, just throwing it at them. Throwing it at them. Yeah. And that is a scary situation, that.
How did you feel when you found out the Mondays had got back together? Did you feel good about that?
No, I felt excellent. I was so, I've got to admit that, I, you know, loving the Big Arm thing as much as I did, because I really did. The banter and everybody involved, it was just such a joyous experience. But I was as equally as happy when I learned that he'd got back in with them. I was so made up for him. It's like, well, you know, he started this. He should be there. And to get it back and then to get round the world, I was so made up for him. I was buzzing for him. I really were. I couldn't have been happier. I were happier with him doing that than coming back to us, because he needed to be getting out doing what he's fantastic at, basically. And when we went, remember when we went to the first one they did at the GMEX when you and the lads come over? And we all went down, didn't we? Not the GMEX, it was the MEN. What a gig. You're like, you know, have you heard that? You know? And I'd not heard him do that. He didn't touch the bass when I was with him.
And percussionist Lee Mullen has nothing but positive things to say about Paul.
I always saw a professional side of him, and he was always, everything he ever said that he was going to do, with me involved in it, he did. So he was always very, very courteous, and he was always very professional, and he was a friend. I considered him as a dear friend. And he was somebody musically who I always had a good time on stage with. I never had a bad experience with him, and that was even with Buffalo 66 as well. I loved him being in that band. He came up with some great bass lines that made that band.
OK, so tell me about your days in the Mondays. Do you have any good stories?
Martin Herbert was his tech. He told me one day, he said, Paul's going to have a keg at the side of his Ampeg stack. And I said, what? So he said he's going to have a Stella keg. And I went, what for? And he said, because so he can pull his own pints in between the songs. And I was like, I don't believe you. And honestly, that image of me on a riser playing with the Mondays and looking down and him pointing at me, and we're trying to start a song. I think we're trying to start Kinky Afro or something. And he's looking at me and he's going, trying to point at me, and he's going, do you want one? And he's like, we're in a bar. And we're playing somewhere like in Glasgow at the arena. And he's going, I'm just like, hang on a minute, I'm just pouring a pint. And he's like, just making sure the head went on properly. It was hilarious, honestly. It's so funny. Yes. I remember being in Norway. We did a festival in Norway, Christian Sand Festival. And we went on there, and somebody had, as soon as we'd gone on there, I think somebody had give Paul a V. He'd put two fingers up to Paul or something. It was like spoilt the whole gig for him. And he just wanted to fight him. And he was like, all the way through the gig, we started every song, and he was pointing at this person, and he had his bass, and he was going, after the gig, and I've never seen, honestly, we did like an hour set, and he ran off the stage, and the security followed him. I don't know ever what happened on that, but I've never seen somebody so upset as well. He was, and I said, what did, he came up afterwards, I said, what happened? He said he disrespected me. He said he put the V's up. As soon as I walked on stage, he decided he didn't like me. He said, I don't know who he is. And then on that same, Garbage were on with us, and on the same, we went backstage. And Paul just decided that he wanted a food fight, and we're in catering backstage. And honestly, it was like something out of a Western. It was just, food was flying everywhere. It was ridiculous. That was backstage at a festival, and Paul started that. I don't mind saying that, and I don't know he won't mind me saying.
Pete Smith remembers when the Mondays very first split up.
The first time the Mondays split up, all of them raided the rehearsal room to get whatever they could sell for heroin or for other reasons, and Paul got the sampler, but we were always having to buy floppy disks to save the samples on. And they were like £1.50 each or whatever. So he's like, oh, I've got a box of old discs. You can just wipe them and use them again, can't you? So I was like, yeah, sure. So he brought me this big box of discs. And he says, yeah, just wipe them all. It's fine. So I was like, right, okay. So I got them open. And I was looking at them. And it's the entire Happy Mondays collection of discs. So all the samples from, like, all the live stuff, and they're all in a box like that. So I was like, well, I can just wipe these then, can't I? Of course, I was like, of course I'm not going to wipe them. It's like history, isn't it?
Have you still got them?
No. So what happened was...
sold them. eBay. Sold them for smoke.
So basically, right. No, so I close the box, and I put the box in my loft, right? And I was like, that's a piece of my history and a piece of Manchester history. I'm going to put them in a safe place. So I put them there. And then he then disappeared off. And then I'm just at work one day, and Claire phones me up and says, Paul's been on the phone. He's coming round, so you better come home. So I was like, what? What does he want? He's like, oh, he's a bit cryptic. So I get home, and I've not seen Paul for like 2 years or something. And he's sat on my sofa. I'm like, hiya, what are you doing here? So he's like, oh, well, the Mondays are getting back together and blah, blah, blah. So I was like, oh, that's nice. He's like, do you remember them discs that you had? So I was like, what discs? And he says, you know, those discs that I gave you and told you to wipe. So I was like, oh, yeah, I remember those. Yeah. And he's going, He's going, do you wipe them? So I was like, yeah. So I brewed up and I was like, no, actually, they're in the loft.
Daz remembers the last time he saw Paul.
When he got back in the Mondays, me and Duffy, for some reason, we were over Worsley and we were just coming up past Derek and Linda's house and he stood there on the street waiting for his lift. It was so weird because I thought you were in America. Like, what are you doing here? Yeah. But that was funny because we were in our work clothes, so we jumped out and the look on his face was, who the hell is this? You know, coming at him. But when he twigged, yeah, he was happy to see us.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, that was last time.
And how did you find out that he died?
I heard it from a friend, but I don't know where he heard it. But I were told before anybody had heard it, so I can't remember who it is who told him. But nobody else knew when I found out. So you're a bit like, can't be, can it? Can't be real, that. But, yeah. Then it were on the news that night, like, oh, it is real. Oh, dear.
How did you feel?
Gutted. Yeah, you know, when you've spent quite a bit of time away from someone, you still know they're out there. And there's always going to be that time to catch up and have a brew and a chat. And it's that never going to see him or speak to him again. That's an awful thought.
And Double Pudding feels the same way too.
I miss Paul and I miss Derek as well, you know. There was always a respect with them. I'm talking about Paul and Derek. There's always stand-up geezers.
And drummer Danny too took it very badly.
Oh, I'm devastated, really. Yeah, really upset. I mean, last year, my dad passed away earlier that year in March. It's coming up for nearly 12 months ago since my dad passed away. He'd been very ill, you know, he was like nearly 80. And so I remember, funnily enough, just after my dad passed away, Paul sent me a text saying, oh, man, I'm sorry to hear about your dad, keep the faith, all this stuff. And really nice text. I said, oh, thanks, Paul. I had no idea that shortly afterwards he'd be meeting his maker as well. It was a shock. Big shock. It's still strange thinking that he's not about. Yeah. I still expect to get that humorous little text off him now and again. And knowing that that's not going to happen again, it is weird. And it does, you can't help but get sentimental about it. It really does remind me of how special those times were back in the day with Big Arm and the good memories, and I'm glad.
Oh, thank you so much, all of you. You've been amazing. Really, really, really good.
Thanks for asking.
Yeah, thank you.
No. It wouldn't have been the same without you. You're a very important part of his story. Very important part of his story. More than you know.
Well, let's keep in touch.
Yeah.
Keep us updated, Angela. I can't wait to start seeing this.
All right, fantastic. Thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Thanks, all right, I'll see you soon. That's it for this episode. We will be back again next week with another special featuring the rock and roll mums, Paul and Sean's mum, Linda, and Gaz Whelan's mum, Sandra. And in 2 weeks' time, we'll have the grand finale of the main series with the last episode that features Paul. The Big Arm album is out today. It's called Paul Ryder's Big Arm, and the name of the album is Radiator, so get yourself a copy wherever you buy your music. Please support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/thePaulRyderTapes. The website is paulryder.tv. Check out the merch in our shop and join in the conversation on the socials. Please give this podcast a review if you've not already done so. It really does help us, especially if you say nice words. Big, big love to all of you. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back again next week. Same time, same place. Big thanks to Daz, Danny, Pete, Lee, and Double Pudding and Chips for being this week's special guests. And big love and respect, as ever, to the star of the show, the one and only, the late, great Paul Anthony Ryder. Bye, everyone.
What I got at Jamaica beaches now, my